Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
Happy Friday to everybody. This is the Bump and Stacey Show. We got a great show for you today. At 11, Mariners broadcaster Gary Hill will join us. And at 12, Turbo joins the show. And you guys are in for a treat. It's the Dad Podcast. We back, baby.
On a Friday, too?
On a Friday. On a short day. We're off at 1 o'clock today. Wow. So you know where I'm going if the weather holds up. I'm hitting the course. What
hitting
you doing?
The links. What am I doing? Probably like Costco or something. Getting in early. You can't go to Costco on a Saturday.
No,
that's stupid. Why would
nightmare.
You ever do that?
It's my nightmare, honestly.
So Friday night is usually the night we hit the scene.
Hit the scene. Yeah. Big night in the Rogers household.
Costco hot dogs, chicken bakes, slices of pizza, you name it. That's what we're doing. Not spending more than like $15 for a family of four at Costco food court.
That sounds like a healthy relationship, Curtis.
That's great.
And relationships can be tricky at times, man. They can be complicated. People grow apart. They change. And sometimes people split and they get back together. I'm talking about Jamal. Yesterday we heard Brock Heward say, man, the Hawks could bring Jamal back as a linebacker. Me, personally, I go, I don't know if I would do that. He seems more as a safety type to me. He can play the linebacker position. I ain't mad at him. But I would say you go your separate ways because I feel like something is being created here and big personalities can kind of alter that. Now, Jamal can still play some ball. I'm not hating on Jamal at all. And if they do bring him back, then I would welcome him with open arms. How would you feel about the return of Jamal?
I think I said it yesterday where, like, my mind didn't even consider this a possibility 48 hours ago. And then you hear Brock say it on Brock and Salk that, you know, maybe the door is still open. And it's interesting that Brock says that because Brock had a couple weeks ago called Jamal Adams, I think, his least favorite Seahawk ever, which is that's a pretty strong criticism of a player. And then to see this kind of about face over the last couple of weeks happen is makes you kind of maybe kind of opens your eyes or perks your ears up a little bit. But I don't know, Bump. Like, it just seemed like the relationship between the two parties, between the Seahawks and Jamal Adams, just kind of got to a point of no return. Maybe it was because of the size of his contract. If it was at a much more manageable number, maybe Jamal comes back because last year was his first year back from that debilitating quad injury that he suffered at the start of the 2022 season. And obviously, he wasn't going to be at full health last year because those kinds of injuries, as we heard Pete Carroll say time and time again, it's kind of a 2-year recovery.
Yeah.
It's not just 1 year. I mean, 1 year you're back, you can show that you've done this, and then you don't have the off season of rehab, and then you're hopefully back to the playing level that you were prior to your injury. The problem with Jamal Adams' bump in terms of potentially bringing him back is like, I just don't know if he is ever going to get to that level that he was pre-injury and maybe even pre-Seattle days, because he had the really good 2020 season where he set the record for sacks by a defensive back in a year. But like, when he was healthy, even in coverage, wasn't so good. And now you're going to try and maybe bring him back at a different position while he's also trying to still get his legs underneath him. It's hard for me to make sense of this move. And it's also weird in that we've seen them try to kind of move on from a lot of the guys that Pete Carroll had really backed during his time here. And to kind of still have this around for Mike McDonald, who's trying to, I think, start with a clean slate. It's a weird move that, I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but Schneider yesterday talking about it with Wyman and Bob, it definitely sounds like it's something they've considered.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we acquired it. You know, we were thinking he was a will linebacker. Told you guys before he came in, was really productive. You know, injuries, what have you. Anyway, it didn't work out. You know, and then, you know, the safety group right now is for some reason is a strong group. The market's, you know, there's a lot of guys that are highly qualified. Obviously, you know, guys like Diggs and, you know, yeah, we keep tabs on those guys all the time. really happy for the guys that, you know, as we discussed last week, that went out in free agency, like Brooks, Bobby, those guys went, the linebackers went way faster than we thought they were going to. So based on previous history, so, you know, Colby Parkinson, you know, D. Lou, these guys, happy for them. You know, it again, at a certain point, you have to take emotion out of it and just focus on what's best for the organization and figure out where your stopping point is.
So Schneider pretty much saying, look, we're always going to keep tabs on guys because you never know how things change. But sometimes it's better to move on, and we're happy for those guys. Yeah. Every football team, even the best football team in all the land, the Kansas City Chiefs, every single championship they've won over the past, what, 4 or 5 seasons, the football team looks different. You don't bring back the same football team, but you do bring back the Pat Mahomes, the Chris Jones, and the main contributors. I think it was just time to move along. But Schneider doing what good GMs do and leaving all possibilities open.
Yeah, and I don't blame him for leaving that possibility open, especially because the Seahawks have a huge need at linebacker still. We're going to get to maybe later on in the show somebody in the draft that they could be looking at, kind of reacting to where the Seahawks coaching staff is right now in viewing all these pro days across the country. But yes, the Seahawks have a need at linebacker. But man, I would love for them to go out and get a guy that like has at least played the position regularly, and is not coming back from a huge injury, and also has just not really endeared himself to the fan base here. Because I think there's a large portion of Seahawks fans that are kind of like, really? We're not done with Jamal Adams? I thought we were done with him.
Right.
I thought we had closed that chapter and we were starting fresh, just cutting your losses and starting over again with something new, something that we haven't seen before. Yes, the Seahawks absolutely lost that trade. There's no rectifying that situation. Like, there's no coming back from that. And now you hear Jamal Adams' name kind of creep back into conversations again, and it's kind of like, really? Like, is there not another option out there for the Seahawks to consider? And, like, I think it's tough for a lot of people because Jamal just has not endeared himself to a lot of people in this town.
Yeah, it's the relationship has been kind of tricky with Jamal. And again, I said it yesterday that I would prefer to get a guy who has played the position. Can Jamal play linebacker? I'm sure he can adapt a little bit and do what he does. He essentially has been a linebacker in the NFL at times when he rolls down into the box. But why not go and get yourself a linebacker? And that's exactly what they did this offseason. They add Dotson to the situation, and they also add Jerome Baker. Right here, Schneider talks about the approach to this Jerome Baker deal.
Jerome, since the day he was released, really met with his agent down at the combine, and we're kind of presenting our case, and you know, we think it would be a great spot for him. Both guys have worn the dot, called the defense. You know, Jerome right now would be the Will, Dotson would be the Mike, is the way the coaches are seeing this. And you know, Baker's worn the dot. He can fly. We really liked him in college. He's just a run and hit guy. He's had a lot of production, a lot of sack production too. So the one thing that stands out about him is his range. He can really fly around the field. And Dotson as well, both in coverage, and we're trying to get big up front and get really strong down the middle of our defense, and then try to build from there.
Now, Curtis, I like this approach. Mm-hmm. Go get some linebackers who have played linebackers. Guys that you've watched, you got film, you have thousands of snaps on these dudes, so you can really evaluate them. When they picked up Dotson, I felt like he wasn't going to be the Mike.
Yeah.
Obviously, they bring in Jerome Baker. He's the Mike. He wears the green dot. And the green dot means, obviously, he has communication with the sideline, so he gets guys mm-hmm. in line. And that's important. I think people forget that Mike linebacker, that middle linebacker, is making sure the defensive line are in the right gaps, that the second level are in the right gaps. The communication is important. So could you imagine getting a guy who hasn't worn the green dot on this level, hasn't played the position, throw him at the linebacker spot and say, okay, let's see what happens. That's why I lean towards mm-hmm. it's probably not going to happen, but I guess you never know.
The one thing that has me optimistic about a potential reunion between Jamal Adams and the Seahawks is how Mike McDonald over the last couple seasons was able to get more out of guys that had not necessarily produced to their highest level in the NFL. Like Patrick Queen, for example. Patrick Queen was taken, I think, right after Jordan Brooks?
Yeah.
Maybe it was right before Jordan Brooks.
I think it was
Right after Jordan Brooks. And Queen had been a decent linebacker in the NFL. And then all of a sudden McDonald comes back to Baltimore after leaving for Michigan. And Queen has his best years in the NFL, gets a really nice payday from the Pittsburgh Steelers, and is now set for life financially. I do wonder, I mean, Jadeveon Clowney, another guy who Baltimore had a lot of success with this season. Justin Madubuike, another guy who McDonald was able to get a ton out of. Geno Stone, another guy. Mm-hmm. I think he had, what, 7 interceptions this season after being kind of like a practice squad guy for most of his career. He gets a decent payday from the Cincinnati Bengals. So there is a track record of McDonald's defense being able to get a lot more out of guys than we have previously seen. If Jamal Adams comes back, I think that becomes the ultimate litmus test mm-hmm. for McDonald's ability to get more out of guys than we previously seen, because I think Jamal kind of is what he is at this point. I don't know if there's another level he can get to beyond what he is as a safety linebacker hybrid right now, and that's somebody that just hasn't really been a positive contribution when healthy over the last few years. But granted, he's only played 10 of a possible, I think, 36 games over the last two seasons, so hasn't been able to get on the field, and when he is on the field, hasn't produced the level that the expectations are.
Could you imagine Jamal Adams comes back, and everyone, I would say 80% of the people listening right now would be like, no, why are you doing this? Jamal comes back, and then Mike McDonald finds mm-hmm. a way to get the most out of him. I think that would be just the perfect scenario when it comes to just validating Mike McDonald. I don't think he needs to do that, but if he were to be able to get Jamal over here, put him in a different position, and have him excel, I think he's already been considered like one of the smartest minds in the NFL when it comes to defensive schemes and getting guys mm-hmm. to play. If he were to do that, I think everyone would be behind it. But it's so risky to me. It's like risk reward.
Right.
I've turned the page on a lot with the Seahawks. For 14 years, you've had so much consistency, and now with all this change going on, it's not even a knock on Jamal the person or the player. It's just the situation is let's start clean. You're right. Going to bring guys back. Of course, Reek Willen's back. You got Witherspoon. You sign Cat. But there's been more turnover this year than we've ever seen. I feel like if Jamal were to come here, it might shake things up a little bit.
Now, I do kind of wonder, like, why hasn't Jamal signed anywhere else?
Yeah.
Like, does the rest of the league, have they kind of closed the book on Jamal Adams as that kind of player? Is it just the Seahawks that view him as somebody that they need to try to get something out of before truly moving on from him? Because based off of what Schneider said, we played that cut a little bit ago, it doesn't sound like Jamal is you know, out of their mind yet. You know, he's out of sight right now, but he's not out of mind. It is interesting how him and Quandre haven't signed anywhere. I think Quandre offers more to any NFL team in search of safety help. But I do find it interesting that Jamal Adams has still remains unsigned, because as we know in the NFL, if you show any kind of ability at any point in your career, whether it be just one season as a rookie or whatever, I mean, not to compare the situations, but like, think of the amount of teams that have given like Josh Gordon a chance because he had that one amazing season, I think in 2014, where he had 1,600 yards and looked like an all-pro receiver. Like, think of how many other opportunities he's gotten in the NFL after that. Like, Jamal Adams was a former all-pro. You can't take that away from him. He was an all-pro safety with the New York Jets, I think, in his second season in the league. Like, that kind of ability is so in demand, but I wonder if all the teams that look at Jamal right now and say, like, that was Jamal back in 2019. That's not him now.
There's a reason why he's not picked up. So go ahead and take your time with it. Explore all the options, because we know that that's what they're going to do. But there is no rush. Do what's best for the team. I think John will do exactly that. Opening day is right around the corner, and we want to send one of you and three friends to the game. All you need to do is open the Seattle Sports app and click the Win tab to find out how. If you don't already have the app, simply text APP to 866-979-3776, and we'll send you a link to download right now. Don't miss out on your chance to join the fun at opening day. The contest runs through Sunday, March 24th. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Unfortunately, the Cougs fought off Drake last night to win 66-61. They'll face number 2 seed Iowa State on Saturday. What's the real headline?
Real headline, win or lose, Cougs still booze. Survive in advance, Cougs still dance.
Bars.
There we go.
Bars, all facts. Those are all facts. No lies told right there. I was excited, man. I was sweating for a little bit. There was a time, what'd you say the score was? 7 minutes left?
54-46, Drake was up 8. That was the biggest lead either team had in that game.
Yeah, I was a little nervous. And Big 51. All right, Big 51, you need to go to a pro day or something for Drake. Now, I was a big boy, man. He looked like a defensive end. But this is all I wanted for the Cougs, right, is get into the tournament, win a game, and see what happens. They got Ohio State coming up next. That is going to be tough. I think we've already met expectations. Exceeding would be great, but it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it was a grimy one last night for the Cougs, but that's where they make their hay. They love to slow the pace down. They love to win those grinded-out games. And that's exactly what they did. They were able to withstand some body blows from Drake, and now they move on to face Iowa State, like you said, on Saturday. How about the games from Isaac Jones and Jalen Wells? Both nearly had double-doubles. Isaac Jones finished with 20 and 11. He got a double-double. Jalen Wells had 17 and 9. And then, Bump, something that is very beneficial for the Cougs and Oregon State going forward. The Pac-12 now 4-0 to start the NCAA tournament. Those wins equal dollars. Those wins equal, I think, about $2 million in NCAA tournament units.
Ooh-wee.
That come to Wazoo and Oregon State at a future date. So the more success that Arizona has, Oregon has, Colorado has, and the Cougs have, that's going to be a nice payday for the Cougs as they enter this land of unknown.
Residual income.
Maybe it means Kyle Smith sticks around.
Come on now, make it work.
Headline rewrites.
Number 3 Kentucky was handed the biggest upset of day one, losing to number 14 seed Oakland. What's the real headline?
Real headline, is John Calipari about to be handed his walking papers?
Now he could, but break down the contract situation. It's a lot of money if they're trying to get him up out of there.
So he signed a lifetime deal with Kentucky back in 2019. But there are outs in it, obviously. And if they choose to move on from him, he is owed 75% of what's remaining on his contract, which I believe is like $33 million, which is a huge buyout, obviously, for anybody, especially a college basketball team. We talked about Kyle Smith's buyout at Wazoo. If another team tries to get him, it's $750,000, and then it's $500,000 after the tournament. John Calipari would be owed $33 million if Kentucky decides to move on. Now, that is a crazy amount of money, but it's the SEC. Schools can pay that. Mm-hmm. We saw Texas A&M tell Jimbo Fisher to beat it, and they're paying him like $75 million to get lost.
Gracious.
So, I mean, Calipari may be the one NCAA basketball coach that has done the least with the most. We were talking about the guys that he has put in the league over the last few years. Bam Adebayo, Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Obviously, Anthony Davis winning the national championship. But that national championship that Anthony Davis won, that's the only one that Calipari has on his resume.
Yeah, it's you see the talent that Kentucky gets, and you see what happens in the tournament. Something ain't right. There's something going on with Calipari's process into getting these guys ready for good competition and just the spotlight in general. I remember watching Kentucky basketball at one point and thinking, they're going to win every single game. I don't have to check in with them. I don't need to keep tabs on them. I'll just look for them in the Elite Eight in the Final Four, and they'll be good to go. Things are changing, but also it's nice to see a team from Oakland, not Oakland, California.
Oakland, Detroit.
Oakland, Detroit, go out there and knock these dudes down, man. This is why I love the NCAA tournament. You get games like this. Unfortunate for Kentucky with all the history, but great to see Oakland take down the big dog.
The Cougs in Kentucky have the same amount of NCAA tournament wins since 2019.
Hey, we're a prestigious program, if you didn't know, Curtis. Very prestigious.
Headline rewrites.
The Kraken lost 3-1 to the Golden Knights last night, extending their winningless streak to 6 games. What's the real headline?
Real headline, remember that vacation Oliver Bjorkstrand had to reschedule? I think you can find some dates for that.
You good. Go ahead and set your calendar up. Sit down with your wife. Do you do this, Curtis? You sit down, pull out your
phone.
The calendars all
so
synced
up. We have a wall calendar and our phone calendars that we are putting stuff down on. And usually on the weekend, we will be like, all right, so what do you have coming up? Like, I got to go to the dentist on this day. We got to take the girls to their doctor's appointment this day, what have you. Yeah, I think Oliver Bjorkstrand and his wife, and I think he's got a daughter. I think they can book that San Diego vacation they missed out on. 0.5% odds of making the playoffs right now.
Man, so unfortunate. Had a great year last year. It was magical, but you can't rely on magic. Magic ain't real, Curtis. You need personnel. You need coaching. You need guys ready to go. I can only imagine what it's like in this locker room right now. You know that you're not making the playoffs. Guys are fighting for their jobs, fighting for contracts. I think it feels like Hackstall is going to be okay in this whole situation. I don't think he's on the hot seat. He might be warming up a little bit. But as a coach, you take responsibility and you feel some type of way about this season.
I think next year there's going to be real expectations and real pressure if they don't win. I know Hackstall signed that contract extension following the end of last year. I don't know. They didn't give any details, I think, on how long it was. So it may have been like a 1 or 2 year extension, but... Yeah, if the Kraken have another season like this next year, I think it's very fair to consider the future of Dave Hackstall. And I don't know if Ron Francis kind of falls in that wake either. I mean, he's the guy that put this team together. But I don't think they can go another offseason just kind of sitting on the sidelines and not making anything happen. I get that they kind of fall in line with what the like Mariners want to do, with sort of draft and develop their own guys. And free agency is something where they don't really want to dabble a ton in, but like offseason, you can make as many trades as you want.
Yeah.
Like you've got all these draft picks that you've acquired over the last couple of years. And that's another thing too. Like we haven't really seen a ton of these draft picks come up to the Kraken over the last couple of years and become huge contributors yet.
Still waiting on Shane Wright.
Yeah, we are waiting on
him. Come on, Shane, get it done, baby. You are listening to the Bump and Stacey Show on the Seattle Sports and Seattle Sports app. The Seahawks have only drafted 2 quarterbacks in the past 14 years. A lot of us were expecting that trend to end with Drew Lock being a free agent, then heading to the Giants. Then comes along Sam Howell. What does that mean for the Hawks QB search? We'll discuss it next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
We got Curtis Rogers filling in for Stacy Rost today. The quarterback situation in Seattle has been pretty consistent. We've only seen a couple guys really start over the past 10 years, right? You got Russell Wilson, you got Geno. 14 years, they've only drafted 2 quarterbacks, John Schneider and Pete Carroll, with Mike McDonald coming over, with Drew Lock being a free agent going over to the Giants. We were all under the impression that they might go get themselves a quarterback in this draft, but then they throw us a curveball. They get this young man, Sam Howell, from the Washington Commanders, who had himself a decent season. You do look at the turnover numbers, you say, hold on, pump the brakes. 21 interceptions, 21 touchdowns. He did throw the football over 600 times, the most in the NFL.
You're going to see more interceptions the more you throw the ball.
Just a young guy, too.
Yeah.
Young guy, Bieniemy said, you know what, we did this with Pat Mahomes, we're going to run it back. So when we signed Sam Howell, we're thinking, all right, what does that mean for the quarterback search when it comes to the NFL draft? John Schneider had something to say about that.
No, not necessarily, but I will say post combine, you know, the first negotiating window weekend when Drew went to the Giants, that there was a level of, okay, this guy threw the ball great, that guy threw the ball great, you know, you're like, okay, well, that team needs a quarterback, that team needs a quarterback, that team needs a quarterback, we need a backup quarterback, like, we need to get on this thing, and we got on it and hung in there, and, you know, we were one of 4 teams that was in it, and, you know, Adam Peters, I give him a lot of credit, like, he hung with us.
So it doesn't sound like it's changed their approach to the draft when it comes to the quarterback position. Me personally, it changes it for me. I know they're not going to, I feel like they're not going to get a quarterback early. That 16th spot is safe. I was thinking maybe you grab a Michael Penix later on in the draft. But when you have a guy like Sam Howell, who got the start last year and put up some decent numbers, there's no rush to get a quarterback anymore, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice safety blanket to have in Sam Howell in your quarterback room, especially after losing Drew Lock to the Giants, which I think was a surprise to a lot of people because of how much Drew Lock seemed to have been liked around the Seahawks facility. And I think because he was part of the Russell Wilson trade, the Seahawks wanted to see what they had with Drew Lock before moving on with him. And I think they were pleased with his performance in last year's regular season in the 2 games that he started. which I think was a good enough performance of any backup quarterback. So I look at what the Seahawks have now in Sam Howell, and obviously conventional wisdom would tell you, oh, they don't need a quarterback at all. But, I mean, what if one of these top four quarterbacks somehow makes their way down to pick 16, and they're in a spot where it's like, we didn't expect this guy to be available right here. We may have to, you know, draft this guy because we never thought we had a shot at him. I kind of think to when Aaron Rodgers slipped all the way down to pick 24, when everybody thought he was going to be a top five pick, and the Packers, who already had Brett Favre, were like, well, we didn't expect this guy to be available here. We might as well draft him, even though we don't necessarily need him right now. Maybe that's a scenario that comes into play on draft night where, like, J.J. McCarthy, for example. I mean, I have a hard time seeing him get past Minnesota and Denver, who are, I think, picks 11 and 12 right now. And then Minnesota also has that other first rounder where they could trade up even higher into the first round. But maybe that's a scenario that comes into play. Who knows? But I don't think this means the Seahawks are done looking at quarterbacks, because I think back to one of the first years that Schneider and Carroll were here prior to the 2012 season. The Seahawks already had Tavares Jackson and Matt Flynn, and they had just signed Matt Flynn in the offseason to that, I think, three-year contract, paid him a nice contract. And everybody thought Flynn was going to be the starter going into the regular season. What'd they do in the third round? Drafted Russell Wilson. Right. The rest is history. Maybe there's a quarterback later on in this draft that they look at and say, okay, we could go out and get that guy. Maybe not have him contribute right away, but at least have him here. And like Jordan Travis, I think, is a name that a lot of people kind of look at as a guy later in the draft because he's coming off of that ACL injury. Maybe that's a guy the Seahawks look at. I don't know. Like, I don't think they're done looking at quarterbacks.
Yeah,
either. They're
definitely going to look. And you said something. Best available. If you get to pick number 16 and the best available football player is a quarterback, it sounds like John Schneider and the gang won't stray away from it.
But you don't go till need until you're towards the end of the draft when you look at what's happened. And so, okay, we're going to draft. You know, we did this several years ago. We drafted three running backs. Well, we drafted Brooks, the last running back. It's like he was our highest rated player. Well, we ended up like just taking the best players in the seventh round, and that created a logjam. So at that point, we're like, you know what? That's probably not a great idea. Let's go with, at that point, sixth round, seventh round. Let's go with need and what your numbers look like at different positions based on what the draft has looked like so far.
That's so different from what I remember from previous drafts, maybe, what, 3, 4, 5 years ago. It seemed like they used to draft for need. Now they're shifting towards best available. And a perfect example of that was Devin Witherspoon last year. Mm-hmm. We felt like, okay, the Hawks were probably solid at the corner spot. You're not going to go there. Number 5 pick, you get Devin Witherspoon. Do you think that is a sign of change in this organization? We saw a start last year. Maybe we're going to see more of just best available and then need towards the end of the draft.
I think very much so. I think the Seahawks with Pete Carroll may have gotten into bad habits of drafting for need over best available. But yeah, the Witherspoon pick worked out phenomenally for you. He was a Pro Bowl player in his rookie season, was in the top 5 in Rookie of the Year voting. So that was a smashing success last season, even though when the pick was made, you, me, everybody kind of went, huh? Like, that doesn't really make sense for this team right now, especially considering the needs on defensive line. Jalen Carter was sitting there at pick number 5. Everybody kind of wondered if that was the move the Seahawks were going to make. Didn't happen. Witherspoon comes in. So, yeah, if the Seahawks find themselves in that spot again this year, I would love for them to take the best available player, because, like, this team needs talent in the worst way possible. This team needs an injection of super-duper star talent, and the best way to build a Super Bowl contender is through the draft, because you've got these guys on their rookie deals. We know that because who were the biggest contributors on the 2013 Super Bowl champions. It was all draft picks. Mm-hmm. It was all undrafted free agents. It was Russ. It was Sherm. It was Cam. It was Earl. It was Doug. It was Jermaine. It was just all these guys. You had very little contributions. I mean, you did get big contributions from free agent signings like Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril, but like it was not you know, your roster wasn't just all these veteran guys that you signed big in free agency, and that kind of puts you over the top. Russell Okung and Max Unger, also draft picks that helped push that team over the top. So nailing the draft is something that a team kind of in this transition period that the Seahawks are in has to be priority number one of the offseason. And I think they got it right in 2022. I think for the most part last season they got it right in the draft. So you just got to keep building. You just got to keep stacking good drafts on top of each other, because if not, then you're going to get into that rut the Seahawks found themselves in from like 2014 to about 2022, mm-hmm. where it was like, okay, you drafted Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf in that group, but like there wasn't really any other star players that you added.
I've never heard a team say, man, we got too many good linebackers. Oh, we got too many good guys at this position.
Right.
You know, like it's okay. It's okay to have a surplus of talent at a certain position. You rotate guys in. Here's the tricky part is that if you have a surplus here and you have a demand that you're not filling there, that's where it gets tricky. That's the beauty of the offseason in the NFL draft, is that it's up to these GMs and these owners and coaches to kind of configure a roster that might be weak in some areas and strong in others. Now, how do you kind of like fill the gaps with these other guys? That's the fun part about this thing. So I'm all for the go ahead and draft the best player available, because just like you said, talent wins the football games. You need scheme, you need coaching, you need culture. End of the day, if you can look across the line and say, we got more guys than them, you're probably going to win more football games. So I think you and I are on the same page with that, Curtis. You are listening to the Bump and Stacey Show in Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. The game has changed when it comes to building rosters in college sports. Sustaining a successful program is becoming more and more difficult. Why is that? Curtis and I have the answers next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Curtis Rogers doing his thing while Stacy is out.
I think she's speaking
life.
To the youth again.
She is at elementary school. Telling the kids about
how lucky are those kids.
Her wonderful career that she's made, man. Good for you, Stacy. Enjoy the day off. I wonder what the lunch is going to be like.
How do you think Stacy would react if like one of those kids like had a coughing fit near her, or like a sneezing fit near her?
I think she would be panicked just a little bit. You know, you and I are around kids all the time.
Right.
Stacy would be like, what do I do with my hands?
We're blowing noses. We're tying shoes all day. Like, that's just how we do it as dads. But yeah, Stacy, I don't know. We'll have to get her report on all that. When she's back on Monday.
We'll get a recap. Yeah, we'll get a recap.
Definitely.
Man, it's Curtis, it's getting tough to build programs in today's climate when it comes to the NIL and guys leaving and transferring, guys staying. It's a bit more complicated than it was years ago. I remember when, say, for instance, in football, USC played a bunch of freshmen and they balled out and you knew they were going to be there for 3 years, mm-hmm. and it's all good. Things have changed a little bit. What are you seeing over the landscape of college sports?
Well, I'm seeing more and more veteran players be tasked with the majority of like the responsibilities on these teams. Like, they're the guys you lean on. I mean, heck, here in Seattle with the football team, Michael Penix with the Huskies was a transfer from Indiana, played his final 2 years here at Washington, nearly won a Heisman Trophy, nearly won a national championship. Like, that was a huge reason, maybe the reason why Washington football went from a good program prior to, when the end of the Chris Peterson era. Obviously, there was the Jimmy Lake season that went haywire, but like, you win 11 games with Kalen DeBoer the first year and then you win 14 the next year. That was a big reason why is the reliance on a lot of veteran players. And we're starting to see that too in the NCAA tournament now. We're seeing it all throughout college athletics, where prior to NIL, freshmen got a lot of playing time. They were seen as big contributors, but we just have not seen that so much anymore, especially not just with NIL, but also that extra COVID year. Guys are sticking around for another season. It's really changed the way you build out a team in college athletics. Jay Wright, former Villanova head coach, and now currently a CBS studio analyst, he was speaking yesterday kind of about this and what he's noticed with NIL and how it's changed the landscape of college athletics. Here's what he had to say.
The era of taking these young freshmen and trying to play against older players is over. Like I think he did a phenomenal job with these guys all year, getting them to be as successful as they were. You can see they're playing against grown men. The guys on Kentucky will be far better pros than any of these guys on Oakland or any of these guys in the tournament, but they're not as good college basketball players. It's at this point in their career, they're not as disciplined yet as the guys from Oakland. And it's not Cal's fault. It's they're 18 years old, and they're in this era where everyone's telling them how great they are. Just show up in college and you're going to win. It doesn't happen that way. And the more the guys stay in college because of NIL, it's going to be tougher for young teams like this to be successful.
Bump, if you were a coach that was feeling pressure to win and win right away, what route are you taking? Are you going to go out and recruit a five-star kid that may end up being a one-and-done guy? Or are you going to go out and try to look for a graduate transfer, try to look for somebody in the portal that's played a couple of seasons and has some experience under their belt?
I think you got to shoot your shot with a five-star. I don't think you rely on that, but you got to shoot your shot. You're not going to see this 6'7" guard with handles and bunnies and be like, nah, I'm good on that, actually. But I think you got to lean towards the portal, the graduates, and the guys who have been there. Jay Wright said it. They're playing against grown men. Mm-hmm. This reminds me of when, man, back in the day, there was the Bally's over by Bellevue Community College. We used to go over there and ball. And there was a bunch of us. We're about 24 to 25-year-olds out there running around. Every now and then, the 35-year-olds will hop on the court, and they would beat us. We'd get them, too. But they go on runs. We're like, how are we losing to these dudes? It's that old man knowledge. It's that old man feel of the game. Now 24, 25 in college, that's that old man knowledge, old man feel of the game. That's why Michael Penix was able to have the success that he's had. There wasn't a defense in college that Penix hadn't seen yet. Oh, you're going to throw this stunt at me? Cool, I'll protect myself. Oh, you're going to rotate these safeties? Cool, no worry about that. That's what we saw with Oakland against Kentucky. We saw, what's old boy's name? 10 for 20 from the three-point line?
Oh, yeah. I've completely forgotten it. That's how unknown he was.
All right, he's gonna sell insurance and make a lot of money one day. He's not going to the NBA. 10 to 20 from three, had no
Kolsky,
fear.
I think, yeah.
No fear in his heart. No fear in his veins. Why? Because he played so many games. You're asking an 18-year-old. Okay, especially in Kentucky situation, two of their best players are freshmen. You're bringing them off the bench. They're not even starting, but they're gonna go into the NBA, have a hell of a career. You're asking them within 25 to 30 games coming off the bench to figure this game out and then go to the dance and dominate with all the pressure that Kentucky has on them. Yeah. It's hard to do. Meanwhile, this 25-year-old from Oakland who has nothing to lose, who's been in college basketball for 4 or 5 years, is going to go shoot lights out and be unconscious and say, I'm not shooting no two-pointers. I'm shooting all threes, and I'm going to light you up.
Well, and look at how Washington State has put together their team this year. Oscar Clough, he's a junior. Andre Yakimovsky's a senior. Isaac Jones is a fifth-year player. Jalen Wells is a junior. Like, these are huge contributors to their team. Miles Rice, obviously, redshirt freshman this year, has been phenomenal for them out of their backcourt. They wouldn't be where they are without him, but most of their contributions in their starting lineup are from upperclassmen, and I think that is a big reason why they are where they are. Just the overall experience that they have in playing for a number of years, like, that has helped them in a big way this season. So I look at, kind of like what Washington basketball is going to be up against next year with a new head coach, depending on, whenever that guy gets hired. Like, how are they going to go about building their team? Because obviously we talk all the time about just, the great recruiting ground that is out here in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. But, like, you're going to the Big Ten, you're going to need to be able to get some good footing underneath you in order to compete in that conference. like maybe they go out and look for, you know, third, fourth, fifth year guys in order to kind of expedite things and not worry about developing these guys over a 2-3 year span before they're playing at their highest level.
Sometimes you got to go get big brother. Little brother might be more talented. He has a brighter future. But big brother's been there a while. He's been in some conflicts. He knows how to handle situations. That says a lot. You can feel the demeanor, the calmness, or the anxious feeling of a team on a quarter on the field when you have a bunch of young guys out there because they just haven't been in those situations. So, yeah, I'm with you, Curtis. I think you got to shoot your shot at the five-star. But you got to go get you some old heads at the same time to calm everything down. You guys are listening to the Bump and Stacey Show on Seattle Sports and Seattle Sports app. The Mariners take on the Reds today at 1 p.m. to get their last weekend in the Cactus League going. So why wouldn't we bring on Mariners broadcaster Gary Hill? He joins us next.